we're looking at the miracles of Jesus and what they meant to the people that he was talking to at the time. Now remember, he was talking to Jewish people. It was mainly Jewish people watching what he was doing. And these people were very well versed in scriptures, the Old Testament scriptures, that is. Going to school for a Jewish boy meant going along and learning to recite off by heart big chunks of the scriptures. A bit the same as the way some Muslim boys go to madras schools these days and learn huge chunks of the Quran. That's what the kids, well, the boys, girls can go to school, that's what the boys did when they went to school. Where we are at the moment, the Romans have invaded and occupied Judea. And they tolerate the local religions, but any sign of rebellion is very viciously put down. I'm sure you're all familiar with that. The Jews are governed by the Sanhedrin, which is a council that consists of the Sadducees and the Pharisees. Most Jews regard the Romans as an agent of Satan. And so there's tension between worshipping Yahweh and avoiding the wrath of the Romans, because that means pretty severe punishment if you cross the Romans. And the people are longing for liberation from the Romans, who they consider to be Satan, and the coming of the Messiah, who will come and rule with justice. Let's have a look at some of the characters. We've got the Zealots. Now, these are a little bit like the suicide bombers in Islam today. They're out to fight back as hard as they possibly can and probably cause more trouble than resolving any problems. But then we've got the Sadducees, and the Sadducees are actually very happy with the arrangements. The Sadducees are descended from the Levitical priest group, and under the authority of the Romans, they run the temple, and they've got a lot of power and prestige and privilege, and they want to hang on to that at all costs. Now, they're not a very spiritual mob. They're very legalistic. They're not concerned about moral matters or the worship of God. And they actually believe, because they've got it so good, that they're currently living in the promised age, the promised golden age. And because of that, they've really got no sympathy for anybody else who's doing it tough. So they really want to keep things the way they are, and are very concerned anybody shows any likelihood of upsetting the Romans. Then we've got the Pharisees, who are the religious aristocracy. They have a lot of privilege, and they're very well versed in the scriptures, and they see it as their responsibility to make sure that everybody follows the law to the letter. And the law not only includes what's in the Torah, in other words, the first five books of the law, but all the things that have been written since, all the writings, all the Jewish writings, etc. So they all equally carry authority and should be obeyed to the letter. And they do their best to do that themselves. And because they do, they're pretty arrogant and look down their noses at other people who don't. Then there's the Essenes. The Essenes are a very spiritual group, a little bit like the Pharisees, but they don't have that same privilege and status. They prefer to withdraw. They're quite horrified at the corruption that's taking place in the temple under the rulership of the Sadducees. So they withdraw from this life altogether to a monastery in Qumran, out of the desert. And they live a pure life. They abstain from all the polluting foods and anything that would make them unclean. They spend a lot of time in prayer and writing and study. And they actually believe that the arrival of the Messiah, the Righteous One, is imminent. They're expecting him to come virtually any day. So we know that the Messiah was promised in the Old Testament, and this is a reading from Isaiah that everybody regarded as indicating that the Messiah would be coming very soon. So I'll just read that to you. The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is upon me, because the Lord has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom for the captives and release from darkness for the prisoners, proclaim the year of the Lord's favour and the day of vengeance for our God, and to comfort all who mourn. I don't like this. And so people are waiting for this prophecy to be fulfilled. And Jesus goes into the synagogue and he reads this scroll. So just to read this bit to you. Actually, I won't read it. Lee's got it. Sorry, I'll just change my mind, Lee. I told him I was going to read it, but can you read out?
Let me have this one, so fiddling with the other one. From 18? No, all of it down to... Okay. Jesus returned to Galilee in the power of the Spirit, and news about him spread through the whole countryside. He was teaching in their synagogues, and everyone praised him. He went to Nazareth, where he had been brought up. And on the Sabbath day, he went into the synagogue, as was his custom. He stood up to read, and the scroll of the prophet Isaiah was handed to him. Unrolling it, he found the place where it is written, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners, and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favour." Then he rolled up the scroll, gave it back to the attendant, and sat down. The eyes of everyone in the synagogue were fastened on him. He began by saying to them, "Today, this scripture is fulfilled in your hearing."
Here? Yeah. Wow. What is Jesus saying? What did he just say?
He's
the Messiah. He's the Messiah. He's the Messiah. That's pretty awesome. Well, how did the people react?
This is the reaction. All spoke well of him and were amazed at the gracious words that came from his lips. "Isn't this Joseph's son?" they asked. Jesus said to them, "Surely you will quote this proverb to me, 'Physician, heal yourself,' and you will tell me, 'Do here in your hometown what we heard that you did in Capernaum.' Truly, I tell you," he continued, "no prophet is accepted in his hometown. I assure you that there were many widows in Israel in Elijah's time, when the sky was shut for 3.5 years and there was a severe famine throughout the land. Yet Elijah was not sent to any of them, but to a widow in Zarephath in the region of Sidon. And there were many in Israel with leprosy in the time of Elisha the prophet, yet not one of them was cleansed, only Naaman the Syrian." All the people in the synagogue were furious when they heard this. They got up, drove him out of town, and took him to the brow of the hill on which the town was built in order to throw him off. But he walked right through the crowd and went on his way.
So a number of reactions there. What did you pick up on my own reactions?
First of all,
isn't he awesome? But then when he told them the few unpleasant truths.
They're ready to kill him.
Okay, I'm going to hand back to Ronnie for a few minutes here. Anyway, I'd like you to break into 8 groups. And I've got some readings to give you. So, I'm just going to wander around and give these to 8 people and ask you to grab a cluster of people around you. There's readings and then there's some questions on the back page. So I'll just give you about 5 minutes to have a look at them.
Well,
Let's try the next one. The sea is a pretty big deal in the culture. It's a place of evil. Only God can control it, and there are terrible evil monsters in there. So who's got the Psalms on us? Okay. And then Jesus goes out and calms the Sea of Galilee. There's a bit in one of those Psalms, the second one, about God calming the sea. Could you read that bit? Thanks, Marina.
He stilled the storm with a whisper. The waves of the sea were hushed. They were glad when it grew calm, and he guided them to their desired haven.
Okay, so can you tell us what the whole psalm is about, Marina?
It's about people on ships, and there was a big storm, and they lifted high in the waves, and they were scared, and they reeled about like drunkards, and then they cried out to God in their distress, and he brought them out of their distress to calm the sea.
Okay, could you please read the bit about what Jesus did? It's only a short one.
Jesus was in the stern sleeping on a cushion. The disciples woke him and said to him, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" He got up, rebuked the wind, and said to the waves, "Quiet, be still." Then the wind died down, and it was completely calm. He said to his disciples, "Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith?" They were terrified and asked each other, "Who is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him."
Okay, so what are the implications of what Jesus did there?
I think we felt that the implications were that if they trusted God, or trusted Jesus, he'd calm the storm. Which
is
very similar to the psalm, and
then
they cried out to God.
Okay, now given that it was Jesus that calmed the storm in the second case, what's the implication there?
Well, that Jesus is God.
And how did they respond?
They were terrified and asked each other, "Who is this?" Yeah.
So there's a good example of where they are remembering something from the Old Testament, and seeing that Jesus is actually demonstrating who he is by his miracle. Again, evil spirits are a big deal in that culture. And people are terrified of evil spirits, and only God can protect them from the evil spirits. And who's got the one about Jesus freeing the man from the evil spirits? Okay. So can you just describe the story briefly then?
There was a demon-possessed man living amongst the tombs. He was the one with spirits called Legion, and 1,000 spirits in him. Jesus came along, and the spirits begged him not to send them out into the great pit or some afraid of the rock. But Jesus allowed the spirits to go into the pigs, and then the pigs went into the lake and were drowned. And the people were not very happy about the situation.
They lost their pigs.
Yeah. And the implication is not Jewish people, because of the pigs. Not about a man with a demon possession, but they were a community away from the main Jewish.
And how would Jewish people have responded to that story, do you think?
I don't know. The non-Jewish people won't be happy, because I guess their livelihood would have just been taken away. The pigs are all drowned. What did you say, Reuben? A waste of poor. Anyway, I guess it might be funny, but it seems that we're not sure whether the demons drowned as well, so Jesus tricked them because they thought they were having the easy option of going into the pit. I'm a bit unclear about that.
And the implication is he's actually put them in the sea. That we've just seen as a place of evil. And if only God can control evil spirits, Jesus is demonstrating he can control evil spirits. So that's the implication out of that miracle, that he can control. all the evil spirits and make them do what he wants and banish them to the place of evil. Okay, who's got the one about Jesus healing the paralyzed man?
Yeah.
Okay. What's the story there?
Paralyzed man comes, his friends take the house alone before Jesus. His mission says, "Friend, your sins are forgiven." The Pharisees and teachers all begin to see how soon his fellow his feet, blasphemy, begging for his sins of God alone. And they speak up in their thoughts. And then it says, "Which is easy to say, your sins are forgiven or get up and walk. But I want you to know that the Son of Man has authority on earth to forgive sins." So he said to the paralyzed man, "I tell you, get up, take your mat and go home." And that's what the man did. So everyone was amazed, gave praise to God, they were filled with awe and said, "We have seen remarkable things today." I suppose it's directly challenging, not challenging, but by what it's done. The Pharisees obviously feel very threatened. Yeah, and the people also feel very threatened because their whole whole existence is threatened because they have their form of all Vaishnava, Jesus. So.
Mm-hmm. How the other people respond?
Amazing, gave praise to God, filled with awe. So.
So there's a difference in response there. The Pharisees are pretty annoyed. And the other people think pretty good. Okay, who's got the story about Jesus talking with the foreign woman? Okay. Now, we know that the Jews believed that they were God's chosen ones. So they were superior to the Gentiles, and the Gentiles were only acceptable if they became like Jews. The second issue is that men were far more important than women. So Jesus talks to a foreign woman. Can one of you just give us a brief précis of what
they did?
And what were the implications of that?
Well, no, it's not very pleasant. It really highlights the us them thing. I took objection to the way in which Jesus played it, because the dialogue goes something along the lines of, "My daughter is demon possessed and suffering terribly, the disciples try to shoo her away." And she begged, "Lord, help me." And he replies, "It's not right to take the children's breast and toss it to the dogs." And we know what dog means in that particular culture. And she actually sucks it up, says, "Yes, it is, Lord, but even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table." And then the last verse that's meant to make all good, Jesus says to her, "Woman, you have great faith. Your request is granted," and her daughter was healed at that moment. I'm left feeling more troubled than satisfied, to be honest.
Is there any implications or message?
Yes, but I don't know what they are.
What about the reaction that they have?
Well, I don't know, because he put the rest of the passage.
You didn't look it up in your Bible, then?
No.
Okay.
Sure.
Someone was on the microphone.
I actually found this interesting looking at it, because what they were saying was that the way Jesus treated the woman was perfectly typical of a way a Jewish man would treat a woman or a Gentile. And this woman was both, so the way he treated her was totally normal and acceptable. But the flip side of it was that when she hung in there, he actually responded in a way that for them was totally unacceptable, to grant her a request and treat her like a human being. And that was unacceptable from the point of view of Jewish men, to treat a foreign woman like a human being. And so what he was doing was saying, "I'm turning these Jewish rules on their head. I'm not going to do as I'm expected to do." Even though he started out appearing to do that.
So are you suggesting there might be a bit of satire here, or not satire, but playing the crowd? Or?
Playing the crowd, yes. Starting off by behaving as he was culturally expected to do,
yeah.
And then go, no, I'm not going to comply, which would have been outrageous.
I've read commentators on that passage that believe that the woman actually changed Jesus' mind, and that she's a pivotal point in his story, that he saw himself as a Jewish Messiah, and that woman challenged him to see himself as a Messiah for all, and he listened to her, and she changed his mind and his mission, which makes her one of the most important figures in history. That's not my idea, I'm reading out of the commentary. Don't look at me like I was brilliant.
And that's probably what this commentator, David, that I'm talking about, was sort of, maybe that's where he got that from, the fact that he originally complied with his cultural expectation, but then changed his response.
And the other thing I also, the other thing that leads to the same thing as Claire, but that Jesus was, you know, he wasn't this package that suddenly, you know, he knew everything. He wasn't fully wise, that he grew in wisdom, and that he was also, he could be taught like other people, and that he also made a mistake. But comfort me too, because, you know, there was a whole Christ up as this model that he did everything right. And actually, he didn't. He had to learn, and I love that the woman to him as well. And I can talk about him.
Yes. What? No less. Yeah. Okay, I'm watching the clock. I'm well aware of busting my time limitation here. Who's got the one about the dead son that's being proposed? Okay, so.
I suppose I'm calling you. I'm here all week.
All right. So.
It was about death and about rising from the dead. The first one on Kings 17 is Elijah's son, and God rose Elijah's son from the dead. Second one, Jesus raises a widow's son in Luke 7. And again, in the death of Lazarus, Jesus was involved in raising Lazarus. The differences are, they're basically the differences. It's the first two. The first one was God raising, and the second two, Jesus. And the similarities, was about those one thing, raising the people mentioned. In terms of the reaction of the message, I'll start with reaction. It was basically amazement and awe, as Jesus praised his widow's son, says they were all filled with awe and praise of God. And there was, in the final one that we didn't get through reading, but I've been trying to speed read it while other discussions were taking place, the death of Lazarus, there was a plot to kill Jesus, and there was a high priest who spoke out, you know nothing at all, you do not realize that it is better for you that one man die for the people than that the whole nation perish. So that was a different reaction as compared to the others, because the town folk, some of them were amazed at, you know, the way that Jesus was able to bring out that people, and but their high priest wanted him to basically die for doing these miracles.
So again, we've got a reaction of the general people thinking it's wonderful, interpreting it that Jesus is either the Messiah or somebody pretty important and amazing and connected to God, And the authorities, all I can think of was how they can kill him and get rid of him because he's a threat to them. Then we've got the story of Jesus fulfilling this prophecy from Zechariah. Who's got this one? I'll just let you briefly read that. But, Zechariah predicts that the king will come to Jerusalem riding on a donkey. And then we're all familiar with the story about Jesus riding on a donkey the day before he was crucified. So, again, what's the message and how did they react?
I'm not sure what the message Jesus was wanting to portray us. What surprise, and I've never sort of really done this before, but the events as far as firing the donkey pretty much fulfilled what was written in the prophecy. And then there was the whole riding into Jerusalem crowds and the branches and so on. I sort of was familiar with. But the story ends very sort of quickly and sort of quite abruptly. I never really noticed or thought about it. Just as Jesus entered Jerusalem, this is after all the Hosanna view. Jesus entered Jerusalem and went into the temple courts. He looked around at everything, but since it was already late, he went out to Bethany with the 12. But it looked almost like a bit of a, the celebration fizzled to nothing. There was no response of Jesus to make the most of his adoring crowds. And I sort of wondered if I was thinking about it now, whether that Jesus perhaps wasn't expecting that response, the acclaim. And so he made a point of hanging around. And so, I'm not sure.
You missed the PR opportunity.
Yeah.
You missed
his
PR opportunity.
Yeah, maybe he didn't want the PR opportunity. That's what I see. But it was a purposeful, well, this wasn't what I was expecting. I'm going to get out of here. I don't know. I just thought that this morning and evening and leading up to having to say something.
Ronnie, I know I've busted my time limitations.
Yeah.
Do you want me just to continue this and wind it up now? Do you want me to stop and have the song and then pick it up again to wind it up?
Absolutely.
I might just try and wind it up now.
Yeah,
of course. Okay. Anybody got any comments as to why Jesus didn't make the most of the reaction and why he just went back to Bethany?
Well, he did come back the other day that week and taught in the temple. It's just he didn't stay overnight. The night that he did stay overnight was when he got himself arrested. So he, just as after he'd raised Lazarus and there was a plot to kill him and he headed across the Jordan at that point, he headed out of, well, no, actually, somewhere in the West Bank, he went out away from where danger was. He was not going to get himself killed just by accident or bad planning. Placing himself, that's right. And he certainly he had the crowds for the rest of the week. He was going into the temple and so forth. He just wasn't there at night in the city, which was obviously not safe for somebody who's just proclaimed himself the Messiah by riding the donkey into the city. But at a certain point he tells them all the time's come, and that's when and that's the point at which he puts himself in harm's way if it's gonna play that way.
Has anyone got this one? Can I give it? Okay, I thought it was really interesting. Because he obviously deliberately did the donkey ride bit. He organised it. He organised the donkey beforehand. He asked the disciples to go. It was definitely a scene that he organised. So, with the story about the cleansing of the temple. Tyson?
Well, there's wisdom for that. The part of the temple where the money changers and all that were set up was The other courts, which was the only place where the poor and the widows and the women were allowed to actually go and worship God. And men were allowed to go a bit further in where it was quiet and they didn't have all that trading going on. So my application was that those who were dispossessed and marginalised were being denied access to worship God in a quiet and meaningful place. So it's, you know, Jesus basically going into that place and saying, you know, get out, let these people worship God properly as such. So that's one angle.
And how did the Sadducees respond?
Oh, they were pretty close. It's, I think one of the things I'd also said was that when people would go and buy an offering in the outer, in the, from the those caves in the outer courts, they were taken to the priest for sacrifice. And the priest would then, some of the priests or part of the way it was run at the time was that the priest would then take it away to essentially sacrifice it to the person. But what often wasn't sacrificed was handed back through and around and taken back into the outer courts and sat in the cage and sold again. So it was basically a complete daylight robbery set up. So.
In other words, it was all about this corruption in the temple and the Sadducees' power and control and that sort of thing. And I thought it was interesting because basically in the story, Jesus saying he's the Son of God, my Father's house, how dare you use it wrongly? And he's taking the authority to do something about it. And in the process, really getting up the nose of the Sadducees to the point where they've decided that they've got to get rid of him. So it's an interesting pattern that he comes in on the donkey, he's acclaimed as the Messiah, then he disappears. And he comes back the next day and does this, which is a very deliberate provocation. So it's all a sort of planned process.
And Tricia, the thing that struck me was that he's always constantly challenging him, but at this point he challenges the economic system that profits from that.
Yeah.
So as soon as he challenged the money system, that's when they really plot to kill him.
Yeah.
And it was inevitable that he would be crucified because
absolutely
he challenged the way he was from
that. So he's threatened the privileged status of the Pharisees as the religious aristocracy by saying he's the Son of God, he can forgive sins, he can control the sea, control the evil spirits, all that sort of thing, which really gets up the noses of the Pharisees. Then he's challenged the privileged status of the Sadducees in the temple. But the problem is neither group could execute him by stoning, like blasphemy, because of the Romans. So the only way to get rid of him was to persuade the Romans that he was a rebel. So that's what they set out to do. And this is predicted, as we know in Isaiah, that after the triumphal entry, he wasn't acclaimed as the Messiah and put on a pedestal and worshipped and all the things that people expected would happen to the Messiah. Instead, he was crucified. But that's not the end, because there's still the biggest miracle of all to come. And as it's predicted in the Psalms, that the Messiah will not see death, will not decay, he'll see death, but his body won't decay. The implication is that he will live on. And we have in John, which I won't read now, I've run out of time, but the story of the resurrection. So the story there is that Jesus has been crucified for creating problems with the religious aristocracies and the Sadducees. They thought they got rid of him, and now it's the biggest miracle of all, the ultimate triumph. And so the question is very personal now. What is the message, and how do we react to the fact that Jesus was resurrected? Any comments, questions? I apologise, I had to rip through it a bit too fast. So it wasn't quite, the way I planned it wasn't quite as thoughtful a discussion as I had hoped it would be. But any comments? Questions or complaints? Any more complaints, Paul?
Just the implication from what you said is that the poor people of the crowd were onto it and the Sadducees were upset. And I think that's not always true. There's also signs that the crowd was not onto it either. The story of the feeding of 5,000, where there's that many people gathered because the community is a miracle worker and they come. And so he gives them that bit about, I am the bread of life. And the crowd goes away and only a few of them are left. Because they can't cope with the teaching he's actually bringing. It's not about being about the one working power master. And the crowd, the Sadducees don't like it for what it's doing to their system, but the crowd doesn't like it either.
Yeah, I agree that I'm not trying to sort of say the crowd are all the goodies and the others are the baddies, but there are various reactions. Some people get it, but the vested interests have a reason for not getting it and doing something about it. Or well, not wanting to get it, but they're the ones that actually did something about it to get rid of it. And there was various reactions. Some people got it and others didn't, of course. Any other comments?
I think the reason he came on a donkey is the same as the reason he was born in a manger, is this consistent theme of, although he's the Son of God and the chosen one, he doesn't embrace the trappings of Aaron status on it.
I'll let Franny get this back.